This is the national public broadcast of W.B. Muhammad, Muslim American Society leader. The following interview was conducted at Muslim Journal newspaper for Islamic broadcasting of Lake County, August the 4th, the year 2001. Interviewing Imam Muhammad is Sabur Ahmed Shakir.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of Islamic Broadcasting of Lake County, and I'm your host, Sabur Ahmed Shakir. We're down here in East Hazelcrest, Illinois again at the New Africa Building, talking with the leader of the Muslim American Society, Imam W.B. Muhammad. While we're on that subject, every Sunday morning you can hear the Imam on radio 750 at 7:30 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. Don't miss it. It's a very good show. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, Imam, I had a flyer that was given to me last time we were here. And I was looking at the flyer, and there was something on there called the egg mate.
Yes.
Can you tell us what an egg mate is?
Yes. Egg mate is the name of a seasoned meat. We season turkey and chicken, and we will season beef too, also, for the egg mate taste. But mostly pork is given that season. It's like a mild sausage. But we do also make some quantities of it hot.
I remember hearing a lecture you were doing, I think it was maybe a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, and you had mentioned something about, did your mother help you come up with this?
Oh, yes. My mother told me a story of myself. She said, you say, Wallace used to follow me around in the kitchen, and when I was busy cooking, I would tell you not to get in my way, and you would go over to the wall and you would sit with your back against the wall and watch me cook. She said, once a sister that was helping me in the kitchen for a big dinner I was fixing for your father and his guests, she said to you, she said, son, don't you want to go out and play with the boys? And I told her, sister, leave him alone, don't bother him. So he does that all the time when I'm cooking. And he's not going to bother us. He'll just sit quietly out of the way. And she told the sister, she said, one day he'll be a good cook. Oh. Now, like I am.
Is this a recipe?
No, but I have everything that I do in the kitchen, I remember my mother. No matter what I do, I remember her.
Mm-hmm. When I came into the Nation of Islam in 1971, there was a pie with a strange name. And this was strange to me. It was a pie made out of beans. It was called a bean pie.
Yes.
Can you give us a little history on that bean pie?
Yes. My mother was not the one that started the bean pie.
Okay.
Some sister, and there was a few pioneer sisters, pioneers meaning the senior, you know, the old sisters mm-hmm. have been around for a long time, in the Chicago community there, mm-hmm. Under my father. And those sisters, made pastries, and they themselves created what was called a cheese pie, and it was just solid, mostly cheese, and it was delicious, but much too fattening. And later, they created squash pie, and at that time, there was no squash pie. I didn't know of any acorn squash pie.
Okay.
It was an acorn squash pie, and later, they created the bean pie, and the more recent sisters of the 60s. They created the butternut squash pie and other forms of that squash, sweet forms of sweet from that butternut squash. And they improved upon both the cheese pie and the bean pie.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was there any reason why there was so much emphasis put on the navy bean? You know, we had bean soup, bean pie. Yeah. Why not lima beans? I mean, why was it navy beans in particular that there was a lot of emphasis, as I remember correctly?
Now, that is a very complicated subject. Very complicated subject. But I'll try to make it as simple as I can. The teacher of my father, Mr. Faraz, they're called W.F. Muhammad and also called W.B. Faraz. He had a way of speaking through his own code language. To those, he called everybody students, all his followers students, even to my father, the students. And he had a way of speaking to his students, that's his whole congregation, everybody, mainly the men folk, with cold language. And you've heard the expression beanhead.
Mm-hmm.
He's a beanhead.
Right.
Well, that's where he was coming from.
Okay.
And navy beans, you can call somebody a beanhead, but it can be a compliment too to call someone a beanhead. And I think Mr. Farrar had in mind beans, unlike many plants, they present the bean itself when they go out of the earth. The bean itself is free, not just the stalk goes up or the leaves come out, but the bean itself is free from the earth. The roots go down and the plant comes up, and the bean opens up first in the earth, and then the roots go down and pushes the bean up, and the plant, the green part, comes out of the bean. The bean is opened up, you can see the bean.
Okay.
It grows up and produce itself in many beans on one plant. As Farrar meant, was referring to our intelligence, and he wanted us to free our intelligence and to understand the nature of our own minds. And the bean is a gift code language for the mind freeing itself from the birthplace.
Okay.
Producing a nice, beautiful plant with food that's good for health.
Okay.
He wanted us to be that way.
Okay.
I like it.
Yeah, I do too. I love it. I'm quite sure your father, the late Nation Islam leader, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, had, you know, an impact upon your development and where you are today. How much of an impact did your mother have on you as the person that you are today, that you know today?
As we know, in Islam and in Western civilization, or in civilization, mother is understood to be the first teacher. And Mr. Farrar told my mother, now we had our own schools. They were kind of embryonic schools, you know, they were in that embryonic state at that time when Mr. Farrar was here. But we had our own schools, and we had our own teachers. Mr. Farrar told my mother not to let me go to our own school until I was 11 or 12 years old.
Oh, 11?
Yeah. My mother taught me at home. And my father had my mother get teachers. He got my teachers, recommended teachers to my mother to come to my home to teach me. Minister James, if you might have known, Mr. Farrar. Yeah. Sheikh, we call him Sheikh, the honorable, great honorable man among us. Years before he died, we began calling him Sheikh. Several years before he died, we began calling him Sheikh James Tabal. He was my teacher and also the principal of school during the time when my father was in prison. And he remained the principal of school for a few years after my father retired from prison. Now we're talking about 45, 46, 47.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And during the time my father was in prison, from about 1941, I think, to about 45, I had several teachers from among the pioneers in Chicago. But the main teacher that taught me the most, and I was most at home after my mother had taught me, was James Chicago. So I was kept in the house. I was given special treatment. So I owe you all a lot.
The name Shabazz, I remember a minister, Jeremiah Shabazz, I think,
yes,
and a minister,
yes,
James Shabazz,
yes,
and Malcolm Shabazz.
Right.
Where did this name Shabazz come from?
That's a good question. Again, Mr. Farrar talking through his own code language and giving us a sense of identity and a sense of origin in history. He didn't want us to recall the African past in slavery and even in Africa without a more soul supporting and ego supporting identity and history. So he did the same thing for us that other nations did, that the thinkers did for other nations, thinkers of other nations did for their own nations. If you know the myth of the origin of Romans, it's a myth. It's not true.
Okay.
if you know the myth of the origin of the Egyptians. It's a myth. It's not true. So Mr. Farage knew the psychological support you get from a myth. So he gave a myth of our origin. And he said we were existing before even the material world was existing, before even the material world was existing. The Bible, I think he got this from the Bible, because Melchizedek, it said in the Bible that Melchizedek was before the foundations of the world. these things have to be understood, but they are real good height for common people who feel crushed in below the world, below the people of the world. And that's what was us. We were feeling below the people of the world. So he told us that Jabaz was an African, a black person, he said. He didn't say African, a black person, who was dissatisfied with the world that he was living in at the time. And he wanted to test the human beings to see if they could survive without civilization. So he took his family, his tribe, his people, into the jungles of Africa. And this is the origin of the Africans. He took his people into the jungles of Africa to survive as animals and to see if they could, their humanity could survive. And they survived. They survived this test. And he was called Shabazz, so we are the descendants of him in the myth. So we are members of the tribe of Shabazz, and that's how come the name got to be popular. Malcolm calls himself, once he called himself the king of Shabazz. He translated his name, and he calls himself, in my sense, he calls himself the king of the Shabazz.
Okay. Speaking of Africa, how much of an impact did the religion of Islam have on the continent of Africa?
It had an impact on the continent of Africa, in my opinion. I know a lot of Afrocentric people might not like what I'm going to say, but it's true. It had the impact on Africa that Martin Luther and the Renaissance had on Europe. Yes, same impact. It brought civilization to where there was not civilization before. Mm-hmm. It brought a higher learning to where there was not higher learning before, and an appreciation for the human intellect and human nature that was not there before. So if you study the history of Africa, you find there were great nations, but the whole of Africa was never brought under any one great nation. Not even under Islam, not to this day. Was the whole of Africa under any one civilized idea, you know. But Islam had a tremendous impact on the whole continent from the top to the bottom.
Okay. If you just joined us, we're down here at the New Africa Building in East Hazelcrest, Illinois, and we're talking with the leader of the Muslim American Society, Imam W.D. Muhammad, and I'm your host, Abu Ammar Shakir. Well, Imam, I wanted to ask you a little bit. We talked briefly about the champ, Muhammad Ali,
yes.
Last time you were on the program. But his name before your father changed his name to Muhammad Ali was Cassius Clay.
Yes.
Now, we know Malcolm X. I know some other X's. My name was Nelson X. Why wasn't Cassius Clay called Cassius X?
That's a good question. I think I can ask it. There was a sister, she was a school teacher for us, and our organized Muhammad brought her into Chicago. She wasn't from Chicago, she was from Buffalo, New York. He brought her in to be our school English teacher. She was a terrific English teacher. And he did not call her X. He did not call her by X. And I think he was kind of conscious that we like were wondering how come she is treated differently. So one day he told us, he said, the sister, her name, I'm trying to think of her first name, I can't think of first name right now, her last name was Douglas. She was my school teacher too, with so many thoughts going through my mind, I can't think of her first name. I see her face as clear as day. She said, she told him, she said, I know I'm supposed to take an X, but I want to tell you something about my family. So she told Abdullahi Muhammad, he said, that her family were educated people And they love the Douglases in our history. Paul Lars, what's the Douglas? The poet named Douglas. I can't think of his name. There's a poet named Douglas, and also Frederick Douglass. So they love the Douglases. The poet, the leader the abolitionist of slavery, to abolish slavery, Frederick Douglass, and statesman Frederick Douglass, and also this other Douglas. I can't think of his name right now. She said, the name Douglas means a lot to me. I would not like to give it up. She said, it's a slave name, but for me, it's not a slave name, she said. For me, it's the name of great African American. And Lord Elijah Muhammad told her that she could keep the name.
We will return to today's broadcast after this important announcement. Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American spokesman, will be making appearances throughout the country, and those wishing to support his mission of propagation and community assistance are asked to send their contributions made payable to Ministry of W. Dean Muhammad and mail to Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois 60409. And now back to today's program.
Is that the reason for us getting rid of the last name as opposed to keeping the first name?
No, yes. Yes, to get rid of the feeling that you belong to white race, to the white race. But they named you. Usually you name something that's yours, isn't it?
Right. Right.
But let me finish that logic that I believe our Elijah Muhammad was using. That woman was important. She was an educated woman. Terrific. She turned out to be a terrific English teacher. And she had a high man and an independent mind, but wanted to serve him and the community. So he wasn't going to lose her. See, he's a wise leader.
Right.
Muhammad Ali had become popular already, as Cassius Clay. And the world knew him, at least the fight world, knew him as Cassius Clay. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad would not like to take, hurt the popularity or the image of a person in the eyes of his supporters. And for that reason, he did not have him take an X, let him stay until he decided that he wanted that. He came to my father.
Oh, he did?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. He came to my father and asked my father to change his name. My father did not tell him he could change his name.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, Malcolm is a Christian name. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm remained Malcolm.
Okay.
Until Malcolm asked that his name be changed. And then it was Maddox and Miles.
Okay.
But he put down Maddox.
Right.
It was still Malcolm, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because he was popular in that name.
Right. Okay. What was the feeling of the community at that time when Muhammad Ali, who was then Cassius Clay, was getting ready to fight Sonny Liston? Did the next of the Islam, did the Muslims think that he was going to win that fight?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. All the Muslims, but
all the smart ones were listening.
I was keeping up with Sonny Liston, okay.
Right.
I didn't know this young cat is saying.
Uh-huh.
So I said, oh, no, he's not going to put that. And he's too, I said, he's too frail. He mm-hmm. doesn't have enough power.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a knockout punch. He has to weigh you down and knock you out.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, no, he's not going to beat Sonny Liston. I didn't think he would put him.
Right.
And there's some who think he did with him the first time.
Okay.
But Malcolm believed he was with it.
Uh-huh.
And my brother, who came in manager later, who believed he was with him, most of them thought, most of the Muslims in the community,
mm-hmm.
you know, if any Muslim fight from the temple
right.
or from the Muslim area,
right.
we on his side, right?
But right.
He gonna win, right?
Okay. Now, we know that Muhammad Ali, he made, you know, millions of dollars for some of the fights that he fought. How much did your brother, who was Herbert at the time, now he's Jabber, was it because of Jabber that Muhammad Ali made the kind of money that he made in his fight career? Was he the one negotiating his contract?
Yes, Jabber, I believe, was responsible for getting Muhammad Ali millions more for fights than he would have gotten if Jabber hadn't been his back. Manager, yes, and promoter.
Mm-hmm.
He was his manager, but actually Jabber was the promoter behind the scenes too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So he had another promoter.
Mm-hmm.
But Angelo Dundee, his trainer,
mm-hmm.
that man was super.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. As you know, he had some other super fighters.
Right.
So he has to get a lot of credit for Muhammad's success in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Now, speaking of that, was Muhammad Ali, I know he came up, what was it, 73, 74, when he fought George Foreman over in Africa. He came up with the rope-a-dope.
Yes.
Was he coming up with his own strategies, or how much of that was Angelo Dundee involved in the fight strategy?
The colorful stuff was mostly all coming from Muhammad Ali.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
All of it.
Okay.
His fascinating gift gab,
mm-hmm.
and his colorful personality and style in the ring,
mm-hmm.
and the playful things he would do to get attention and, mm-hmm. and to aggravate his opponent,
mm-hmm.
all that came from Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much do you think that Muhammad Ali should get the credit for people like Michael Jordan, people like Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and other athletes now making the kind of money that they make? Because if I remember correctly, before Muhammad Ali, athletes were like getting slave wages, if I can use that term.
Mm-hmm. I think it is owing to Muhammad Ali's reputation that he established,
mm-hmm.
All sports figures of our race brought in better time for all of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, did he also...
And the Nation of Islam was in there too now.
Okay.
So to understand that it was known that he was a follower of Allah bin Elijah Muhammad and a member of the Nation of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Muhammad Ali, Allah bin Elijah Muhammad, the Nation of Islam, Muhammad Ali and Malcolm,
mm-hmm.
the African Americans saw all of them in one big frame. So it was not only Muhammad Ali stimulating them and I would say encouraging them and emboldening them, making them bolder to assert themselves. It was also what was behind or right along with Muhammad Ali, and that was the teaching of Allah bin Elijah Muhammad and the image of the Nation of Islam.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Also, and then we'll get off of Muhammad Ali, but how much do you think Don King owes to his success as a result of being in contact with Muhammad Ali, or Muhammad Ali letting him promote the fight?
He owes 50% to Herbert Muhammad.
Okay.
He got to know Herbert very well. My brother, Paul Jabber now. He got to know him very well, and he studied him, and he had faith in himself that he could do what Jabber was doing and do it better.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that because I had personal conversations with
Don King.
Don King.
Mm-hmm.
I had conversations with him. And I didn't ask for him. He talked to me. He met me and he talked to me. And he kind of opened himself to me a little bit. And I know that Jabber was the influence behind his success. But I said 50% because the man had a terrific mind and spirit himself. He had a terrific mind and spirit. And that's why he became so successful.
How receptive is he to Islam, the teachings of Islam?
I think he knows only the Islam he got from the sports world environment, you know, that Jabber was in and Muhammad Ali was in.
Mm-hmm.
And that Islam is different.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about your father, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. During the time when I came into the Nation of Islam, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seemed like there were more African-American males attracted to Islam. What do you think the African-American male was so attracted,
yes.
to the Nation of Islam?
For the same reason that we have our young African-American males attracted to these gangs and to rap.
Mm-hmm.
The gangs give the African-American, young African-American, a sense of belonging and a sense of power that's his own. A sense of belonging and a sense of power that is his own. It's not the white man. It's not another people. It's his own. Then the Nation of Islam gave young African Americans the same sense of belonging and power. A sense of belonging to their own and a sense of having power of their own. That is their own. Yeah. I believe that's and it's the nature of male. The nature of every human male is to have a sense of belonging and a sense of power as a collective body. And so the members enjoy a sharing in that power. So he feels powerful, you know. white supremacy gave that to the white world. Mm-hmm. Nation of Islam gave it to the black world.
We know that your father was probably at one time one of the most powerful black men in America. I think it was said that of him in Reader's Digest.
Reader's Digest had on the cover once. Mm-hmm. Yes, the most powerful black man in America. Mm-hmm. Elijah Muhammad, they said that, yes.
Mm-hmm. How did that make you feel? How old were you then? How did that make you feel?
I was a young man. I was very young. It made me feel great. Mm-hmm. But I knew my father. My father, no matter how other people saw him, and he intentionally presented himself as a bold, angry, mm-hmm. powerful black man. Mm-hmm. But I knew his private life, and I knew him in his, as his own self. My father was an humble man, very firm, but humble, peaceful, and humble. And I loved him, and I tried to take the best from everybody. Firstly, my mother and my parents, and my sisters and brothers, my family. I tried to take the best from everybody, and I took that from him. So when I heard that, I'm an humble young man. I was humble, but at the same time, I was very proud that my father was published by Reader's Digest as being the most powerful black man in America. I never thought I was the son of the most powerful black man in America. I just thought he was the most powerful. I left that to him.
Be sure to join us next time for the National Public Broadcast of W.D. Muhammad, Muslim American Society Leader. For more on the ministry of Imam W.D. Muhammad, call 1-708-798-6653. All right, Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. For Muslim Jones, he's local distributor. And thanks for listening.